This is Audible.
Royal Guard Publishing presents Exile, Devas Chronicles, Book 1. Written by Chase Kilgore. Performed by Alyssa Poon. Prologue. Ash had just picked up his large pizza for dinner tonight and was on his way back to his shitty apartment. He was debating whether to study, play games, or binge the new show everyone was talking about. Studying for his accounting finals was the smart thing to do, but honestly, he seldom picked the smart choice. He was almost home when the world changed forever. The air rippled, followed by a flash of blue light. Suddenly, before him stood a very confused-looking, 7-foot-tall and muscular, green-skinned man with tusks. He was wearing some medieval-style armor and had a battle axe. The two of them stared at each other for some time in bewildered silence. Ash broke the silence by opening the pizza box, the only thing that crossed his mind other than screaming and running away. Easy, big guy. Do you want some pizza? Those blue flashes of light, which people started calling rifts, happened all over the world and kept happening. Beings that were once thought to only exist in the realms of fantasy and myth manifested into a world as strange to them as they were to it. The media began calling these beings paranormals. Some of the paranormals that had arrived on Earth could wield a power that seemed to defy the laws of the universe. They could also embed this force onto items by carving symbols into them. One such item, a translation ring, was common to all paranormals. The ring allowed them to understand the meaning of anything written or spoken. This helped in communication between paranormals and humans. Humanity soon learned what this force was. The paranormals called it magic. Chaos ruled for 3 months as the world lost its mind. Dragons flew in the air. Necromancers raised armies of undead from cemeteries. Dryads took over nature preserves. While there were violent clashes between humans and paranormals, most were relatively peaceful. The paranormals were as lost as humanity on how they had suddenly appeared on Earth. They were in a strange world, lost and afraid. The translation rings allowed them to communicate with the humans they encountered. Many humans offered a helping hand to these poor, lost souls. Friendships were formed, lovers made, and knowledge was shared between them. Technology was as strange to paranormals as magic was to humanity. After 3 months of chaos, the world governments started creating refugee camps all over the world for the endless stream of paranormals. Canada went a step further and granted them a small island to call their own. 3 powerful paranormals met on this small island and came to an accord, creating what would become the Council, the ruling body of the paranormals. The 3 named their new nation, this small island, Devas. The name was a combination of 2 elvish words, D, which meant little, and Vas, which was the name the paranormals called their world. After creating Devas, they worked to bring the scattered pockets of paranormals in the refugee camps across the world under their control. Deals were struck with human governments by the 3, and the refugee camps were walled off from the rest of the world, making them enclaves of Devas. One of the 3 constructed large doorways covered in magic runes in these enclaves. The magic runes would create portals within the doorways that connected 2 points despite the distance. This allowed easy travel between the enclaves, which became known as districts. The small island that was the birth of Devas became known as District 1. The council grew as more paranormals joined, and new rules were established to keep the peace among these powerful individuals. More deals were struck with human governments, who feared and desired magic, just as the paranormals feared and desired technology. As the council dealt with the human governments, the districts were largely left to govern themselves, ruled by district bosses who were either independent or swore fealty to one of the council members. Within 6 months of their appearance, the paranormals were segregated from the humans. The council and the human governments worked together to transport the newly rifted to Devos. The leading scientists proposed the Thin Veil theory to explain why the rifts had started to appear. They believed the home of the paranormals was a parallel dimension that was collapsing into theirs, that this parallel dimension had for centuries subconsciously affected both humans and paranormals, seeding their minds with glimpses of the other side. This was their explanation as to why paranormals were beings from myth and fantasy, and why humans were viewed similarly by the paranormals. A year after the appearance of the rifts, the first human developed magic. Slowly, more humans started to display magic. They would one day just summon a spark of a flame or other minor display of this strange power. The human governments reacted to this by creating the International Mage Laws, a response many criticized and blamed on the government's fear of magic. The Mage Laws gave the government the legal ability to strip the rights and citizenship of anyone displaying magic. They were no longer considered humans, but classified as a group of paranormals called mages. Since they were considered paranormals, the governments would have them deported to Devos. The paranormals still referred to these individuals as human. 3 years after the rifts appeared, Ash made a discovery. He could create a small spark between two fingers by concentrating. Chapter 1. 5 years had passed since the appearance of the rifts. The world freaked out for a few months as paranormals appeared and the government worked to segregate them from humanity. Bo, the orc Ash had shared his pizza with the day the rifts appeared, had lived with him a few months before the government relocated him to one of the paranormal refugee areas that later became part of Devos. He had a rough adjustment period, but Ash helped the Iron Age warrior adapt to his new world. Now he was less a mercenary warrior and more a frat boy, having a love for beer, B-horror movies, and pizza. The two of them still communicated and played games online almost daily. Ash was about to experience Devos for himself today. Despite being born human, he was being exiled to Devos. The government called it deportation, but Ash thought exile fit better. After all, he had never been to Devos before and could not return to the USA or anywhere else that was not part of Devos. The government had stripped Ash of the right to call himself human, since he could use magic. He stared at the high concrete wall that surrounded the Devos enclave in Kansas, the closest to his home. Signs hung outside a large steel door that read, "No humans beyond this point," and "Leaving the United States of America."
"Asher Grayson."
"Wait, are you from that Grayson family?" the soldier asked. Ash turned to face the soldier, who was currently going over his identification paperwork. Thick plexiglass with magic runes embedded in it separated them. Ash was sure it would hold up to both gunfire and magic at the cost of clarity. He could even see his reflection in it. His amber eyes looked at his dark brown hair. It was getting longer than he liked. He would need a haircut soon. The soldier tilted his head to look up at his 6'2" frame. Ash shrugged.
"Does it matter if I am?"
The soldier shook his head and dropped the question. Ash was the only exile they were processing today, but it still took time. He checked his phone while border security went through his bags. He had a few texts from Beau, stating he was waiting for him to cross over, and some words of encouragement and support. They were a stark contrast from the dozens of texts and missed calls from his mother, which was a combination of blaming him for having magic and that she was hiring a team of lawyers to fight this. Ash knew it was just her processing everything. She was the CEO of the family company and was accustomed to having control over a situation. He shot Beau a reply, stating he would probably be starving when he finally got through, and asked if the orc was up to getting something to eat, which he always was. The texts from his mother he ignored a while longer, for the sake of his sanity. He kept fidgeting with the translation ring he had been given by the government. They were very common in Voss, and had been what allowed early communication between humans and paranormals. He had an extra one in his bag that was given to him by Beau when they had first met. Border security returned his stuff to him, and then ran through a depressing list of things to remind him that he was no longer a U.S. citizen, no longer considered human, or a native of this world. After the spiel, he was ushered through a maze of steel doors before he came to one with a sign above it that said, "Entering DeVos." He walked through the final door and froze, as two massive yellow eyes framed by scales stared him down.
"Don't move a muscle,"
a chipper voice said. A blonde elf came over to him with a smile and holding a small crystal. She was wearing a shirt that said, "Welcoming Committee," though the sword on her hip was anything but welcoming.
"Boop,"
she said as she placed the crystal on his bare skin. It started to glow blue as soon as it touched him.
"Ah, cool, lightning affinity. Well, you have magic. Guess we won't feed you to the dragon just yet."
The elf laughed at her joke. There was a deep groan from the dragon, and Ash saw the lizard, who weighed several tons, roll her eyes at the elf.
"Drink this."
The elf held out a small vial to him. He took the bitter-tasting potion with some reluctance. Ash spent the next few minutes being asked a series of questions about his intent in DeVos. If there were any other reasons for him being here and who he was in contact with, the whole thing was a not-so-subtle interrogation, and whatever was in the small vial forced him to tell the truth. He had nothing nefarious to hide. Though the elf did get into some details about his sex life before a growl by the dragon got her back on topic. True to his word, Beau was waiting for him outside the security check area. Ash shook his head when he saw his old friend. He was standing there with a shit-eating grin on his face, holding a small cardboard sign. "Mr. Asshole." Ash flipped off Beau.
"Ah, Mr. Asshole, there you are.
How long have you been standing out here holding that sign?"
Ash laughed. Beau slapped him on the back and took one of his bags.
"Too long. Security was starting to give me odd looks, and they have a dragon. All women look at me like I'm a tasty treat, but she would probably consider me an actual treat."
Ash laughed. "Some would say you're confident, Beau. Most would just call you delusional."
"I come all the way here to get you, and you say that about me?"
The orc smirked and gave him a shove as revenge for the jest.
"Seriously, Beau, thank you for taking me in until I get settled into this new life,"
Ash said sincerely. Beau blew a raspberry.
"You did the same for me when I came to this world. I would dishonor myself and my ancestors if I didn't help you likewise. Also, we are friends."
Beau jerked his thumb in a direction leading away from the security gate that Ash had just entered through.
Come on, the portal's not far from here. We can head to my home, get you settled, then grab some grub. I know just the place.
The portal was a massive stone archway, carved in runes, and could have easily been considered ancient, if not for the large ATM-style keypad on the side of it. A sign above the keypad stated in bold letters, "Please enter your district to activate portal." Bo walked up and punched in 114 on the pad, and the portal glowed as a swirling blue vortex appeared. Bo stepped through, and after a short hesitation, Ash followed.
"Welcome to District 114,
Bo said. "No name, just District 114.
"I'm sure the town had a name from before it was abandoned, then turned into a refugee camp, but hell if I know it. Everyone calls it District 114 or just 114. The rest of the districts use numbers as well."
They walked through what looked like a small town that had a sudden population boom and needed housing quickly. Many older buildings had the characteristics of what had perhaps been a resort town at one time, but where room permitted, there were shipping containers converted to buildings. Ash saw a wide variety of residents, who honestly stared at him as much as he was at them. Not a lot of humans had become mages and been exiled, but the number was growing each year. Beastkins, which was a name for a wide subgroup of paranormals with various animal ears and tails, made up the majority in District 114. The wind shifted, and suddenly the air was heavy with the smell of salt.
"We're by the ocean?"
Ash asked with surprise. Bo nodded.
"Technically, we're now on the coast of France, but it's part of divorce."
"We seriously just traveled thousands of miles by walking a block and stepping through a blue glowing door."
Ash shook his head in disbelief.
That's magic for you,"
Bo said with a shrug. The apartment was a two-story brick building that had probably been a condo when the town had been a tourist destination. Bo lived on the second floor. The apartment had an open floor plan to save space, two bedrooms, and a bathroom. Honestly, the whole setup gave Ash flashbacks to the apartment he had back in college, including the stack of empty pizza boxes. Before heading to the tavern that Bo had in mind for food, Ash decided to call his mother.
"Yes, I'm fine, Mom. The portal was like stepping through a doorway,"
Ash said, doing his best not to sigh. He was paying for not responding to any of her messages and calls. Apparently, his mother thought he could be the first person to talk their way out of being exiled as a mage, but only if he had responded to her and let her tell him what he should have done. The woman was a control freak. He knew this wouldn't be a quick call, but when he learned the place Bo was planning to take him to was a tavern, he knew it was best to make the call now, while he was still sober. Getting shit-faced was a very tempting idea to Ash right now. On top of everything else going on with his exile, his mother had missed a few business meetings, which she blamed on him. Something about how since he ignored her calls, she was too distraught to attend them. Through the course of their conversation, his mother's ire found an old target in Bo, and she focused in on him. "Yes, Bo's place is clean and furnished." Ash rolled his eyes. He was not even addressing that she had asked if he was living in a cave. When Bo had first started living with him, he had some rough edges.
"She wouldn't know good decor if it bit her on the arse,"
Bo mumbled. He was straightening one of his framed movie posters on the wall. This one was Attack of the Robo Barista, and had a cyborg woman in an apron murdering someone with a pot of coffee. Bo was very fond of his B-horror movies. Thankfully, his mother's tirade ended, and she let him go so she could focus back on work. He gave her a little slack for everything. Ever since they had lost his dad to cancer, she didn't do well with things she had no control over.
Beer time?
Beau asked when he saw Ash end the call.
Beer time. I need something strong after that call,
Ash answered with a groan. A few minutes later, the two of them were at a tavern Beau frequented. It was popular with the local orc population. The name of the place was the Twin Swords, but everyone just called it the Twins. Beau made more than one joke on the way there about the name. Ash let Beau have his fun. Hell, after enough rounds, he might even laugh at some of his jokes. Chapter 2. The next morning, Ash and Beau were struggling to prepare cures for the massive hangover both of them had. Last night had been a whirlwind of beers, food, and Beau introducing him to every patron of the Twins.
What happened with Brenda last night?
Beau asked as he nursed a horrid combination of raw eggs mixed with orange juice.
Pretty sure she left the bar after you threw up on her,
Ash replied, after thinking about the orc woman who had briefly talked to Beau. Beau grimaced.
Think I could still salvage that?
Ash chewed his mouthful of greasy hash browns, bacon, and eggs before answering.
Not unless she has some weird kinks. I'd be amazed if she ever talks to you again.
Beau groaned.
She had nice tusks,
he said softly to himself. Ash chuckled.
She did! I just may have been distracted more by her other qualities.
Beau downed what remained of his glass of OJ and eggs, while Ash tried not to choke.
So, what are your plans for the day?
Beau asked.
Honestly, not sure. I need to find a job, but I'm also not sure how everything works in Davos. The government just told me to get my shit and get out.
Beau's nod of understanding turned into a wince, his hangover taking revenge for the movement.
I've got the job covered. Friend of mine needs help with a shop.
Beau scratched his chin in thought.
As for how Davos works, well, it's a vassal system. What you would consider the government is split between district bosses and the council. Districts are usually controlled by a boss with a gang or gangs. Acting as their enforcers, they police and govern the district. These district bosses are either independent or vassals of a council member. The ones that are vassals get support from the Davos government.
So, the government's a bunch of feudal gangsters?
You've got to remember that the world we came from was feudal and tribal. Many of those that are district bosses or council members were chieftains, warlords, or kings back on Voss.
Ash took another bite as he thought.
So, if the district bosses and gangs run the district, what does the council do?
Beau grabbed a glass of water to follow the OJ and egg remedy.
They interact with the human governments, making trade deals, bringing in the new arrivals from Voss, and keeping the more nervous human governments from doing something stupid. Honestly, if you placed all those who made up the council together back on Voss, it would have turned into a bloodbath. They're the most powerful paranormals to come from Voss, and many are old rivals. Only the risk of the human governments and agreed-upon rules keep the council united. The most important rule is that council members don't interfere with matters inside Davos directly. They must use their vassals as proxy. This helps limit open combat between council members.
Ash frowned. The whole system of government sounded like a corrupt death trap for anyone without power. Do I need to meet the local district boss or something? Bo shook his head.
District 114 is made up mostly of Beastkin and is controlled by a Beastkin gang called the 114 Pack. The gang's led by an independent district boss named Phelan. She's normally a recluse, and you'll only see her if there's trouble. Unfortunately, some of her gang members like to cause trouble and drag her into it. Best to avoid them.
Ash clicked his tongue. Great. Let's switch the conversation to your friend who needs help with her shop. Any more talk about the DeVos government, and I may need another drink. Bo smiled.
Oh, Lily! She's crazy. You'll love her.
After a 30-minute walk, they arrived at their destination. A sign that read, Lily's Garden, hung on a converted shipping container building beside a large greenhouse. The sign showed a smiling cartoon woman with black hair that had small pink flowers dotted throughout it. The converted building was covered in numerous potted and hanging plants, so many that the shop looked like a small jungle had sprouted out of the sidewalk. Inside the building wasn't any better, as everything vanished into a sea of green leaves past the counter of the store. Bo walked forward and rang a small bell on the desk. After a few seconds, he rang it again, then a few more times after that.
Stop ringing the damn bell! What the hell is wrong with you? Doing shit like that so early in the morning.
A petite woman who matched the cartoon on the sign stepped out from the mass of leaves behind the counter. She was wearing a blue bunny onesie and carried a body pillow, almost as big as her. She glared at both of them with an angry scowl on her face. Ash couldn't help but think she looked adorable.
Lil, it's noon. Your sign says you've been open for the past 4 hours.
Bo deadpanned. Lily glared at them.
I don't see a damn clock anywhere.
Ash pointed at the one hanging on the wall next to the counter. Lily's eyes glanced at it, and a vine shot from the surrounding greenery, grabbing the clock and smashing it to pieces. Dryad. Lily is a dryad. A lot of paranormals made a big splash in the news when they came through the rifts. Dryads could control plants, which allowed them to make a seed grow into a full plant within seconds or turn an entire forest into a deadly weapon. One dryad had been in the news after taking control of Yellowstone as her territory. She had held off the army that came for her for weeks until they negotiated with her to leave for DeVos.
How about Bo and I go get some coffee and food and come back? Let you wake up some.
30 minutes later, a much happier Lily was munching her way through a dozen powdered donuts and sipping coffee that probably had more sugar than the pastry. She had enough powdered sugar on her face that she looked like a drug lord moments before the cops busted in, but she continued to ignore the napkins Ash was pushing toward her. Bo was staring at the donuts as if he were debating the risks of trying to snag one.
So, what brings you both to my shop today?
Lily asked as she pulled the box of donuts closer. Ash elbowed a disappointed Bo, bringing him away from the pastries and into the conversation.
Oh, right. Lil, this is a friend I was telling you about. The one that needs a job.
Ash stood and held out his hand. Name's Ash. It's a pleasure to meet you, Lily.
Likewise, Ash.
Lily said as she shook his hand with her powdered sugar-covered one.
The job is pretty simple. I mix the potions and you deliver them, work the storefront, and handle the phone. Bo said you know how to drive a motorcycle, correct?
Ash nodded.
Yeah, I had one before coming to DeVos, but they wouldn't let me bring it through.
The council limits any motor vehicle imports to just businesses. You've probably noticed the lack of vehicles,
Lily said. She finished her coffee and stood up.
Follow me. I'll show you my bike.
Between the shop and greenhouse was a bright green sports bike with a sunflower decal on the gas tank.
I tried to learn how to ride it, but the speed just scared the living daylights out of me. Not sure how you humans can stand it.
Ash let out a low whistle as he looked over the bike. It was a nicer model than the one he'd had to leave behind.
Well, anyway, be here at 7 a.m. tomorrow to start the job. Pay is every week and is a percentage of what we bring in minus operation costs.
Lily turned to head back into her shop. I'll be here at 7 with coffee and donuts. Ash called after her. She turned and smirked at him.
Smart man.
They'd made it a few blocks past Lily's shop when a group of beastkin approached them. A blonde female wolfkin stepped forward wearing a feral grin on her face. The rest of the group stood behind her.
Gotta pay a fee to be in our district, human. Will it be in blood or cash?
Beau sneered and put himself between Ash and the beastkin.
Seriously, Ray, do you not have something better to do?
Ray smiled and cocked her head to the side, as if pondering the question.
Not really. So I guess we'll take the cash and the blood.
She laughed. Two of the beastkin tried to slip past Beau to reach Ash. He had already figured this was heading south and had been pulling on his magic, drawing his lightning affinity into his fingertips. This was originally a party trick to show off his magic after it had developed in him 2 years ago, but it was also something nasty to be hit with. Lightning jumped between his fingers as he slammed his hands into the faces of the two charging beastkin. They twitched and dropped to the ground hard. Beau threw a hard right into Ray's face, sending her flying back into the remaining beastkins.
Run!
Beau shouted. Ash jumped over the two unconscious beastkin and raced after Beau in a mad dash. They didn't stop running until they had made it to the twins.
Even Ray is not stupid enough to try something in here,
Beau said while panting.
I take it that's the local gang you were warning me about.
Ash was leaning against the wall of the tavern as he tried to catch his breath.
Yeah, Phelan's gang, though Ray is the one that usually causes everyone trouble. So, lightning is your magic affinity? That's cool.
Ash nodded.
So, how much shit are we in for attacking her gang?
Beau grimaced.
Depends on if Phelan gets involved. I doubt Ray will try to attack you again now that she knows you can put up a fight with your magic. She's a coward if she doesn't have a dozen beastkin at her back or Phelan to back her up.
Beau stretched his back.
Might as well get some food while we're here.
They found a table and ordered some food while waiting out the 114 pack. When they thought the coast was clear, they headed home.
Fuck,
Beau whispered as they approached his apartment. Ray and the beastkins from earlier stood outside the apartment beside another wolfkin. The new one had chin-length, dark, shaggy hair and sapphire blue eyes that almost glowed as she watched them impassively. Two scars hugged the side of her right cheek. She was physically fit, like all the beastkin Ash had seen, with toned muscles visible under her t-shirt. Ash would call her beautiful, if not for the fact his blood was running cold. He knew who this had to be.
These are the ones that attacked and robbed you?
Phelan asked Ray.
Yes, the human used magic and the orc sucker punched me. They attacked us for no reason.
Ray whined. Ash's brow furrowed at the lie.
That's bullshit!
The wind was knocked out of him as a pillar of earth shot from the ground and slammed into his chest, knocking him backward. Another one slammed into his back, shoving him forward onto his hands and knees. He was sure a few of his ribs were now cracked. His meal from the twins erupted out of him. Looking up, he saw Beau lying on the ground out cold.
Beau!
Ash gasped as he tried to pull himself towards the motionless orc. The sound of footsteps drew his attention in time to turn before Ray kicked him in the side of the head. Everything went dark. Ash groaned.
I think he's waking up,
a voice that sounded a lot like Lily said. He tried to sit up, and a small hand went to his back, supporting him. A vial was pressed to his lips.
Drink this. It will help heal your busted ribs and the concussion.
The syrup from the vial had an iron and earthy taste to it, and Ash was sure he didn't want to know the ingredients that went into making it.
Beau called and said you met Phelan. I went ahead and put you down for being out sick for the next 2 days. The potion should have you better by then.
Lily?
Ash asked as he struggled to open his eyes. The light of the room hurt like hell. Finally, he forced his eyes open and saw he was lying on the couch in Beau's apartment. Lily was next to him, packing away small vials into a travel bag. Beau sat on the recliner next to the couch with an ice pack on his head.
When Phelan shows up and starts throwing around her earth magic, it's a good idea to just play unconscious,
Beau said as he repositioned the ice pack.
Her sister used to help keep her in check, but the two of them had a fight and she moved out of the district. Phelan's been more temperamental ever since.
Ash let out another groan.
Ugh, fucking bitch just believed Ray's lie and wouldn't even hear our side.
Chapter 3
You doing all right?
Beau asked as he made coffee. Ash looked up from his notebook at the kitchen table, pausing the video playing on his laptop before turning to Beau. He was shocked it was morning, which meant he had stayed up the whole night.
I'm good.
Wouldn't mind a cup
if you're making extra.
Beau grunted and poured a second cup, bringing it over. His eyes locked on the screen of the laptop and he frowned.
Magic lessons on YouTube.
They're blocked from showing up anywhere outside of Devos. What magic I can do is self-taught from trial and error. Beau took a sip of his coffee.
Is this because Phelan kicked your teeth in?
Ash thought for a moment. Yes. It also made me realize that I need to be stronger if I'm going to make it here in Devos. Beau gave a grunt of approval.
All right. So long as you're not going to watch a few clips then run off to your death challenging Phelan.
You think I would do something that stupid? Beau just gave him a pointed look as he sipped his coffee.
Huh. You're watching a beastkin streamer?
Ash cast Beau a curious glance. Yeah? Have a problem with that?
No, just odd. Magic is uncommon with beastkin, so it's surprising that you pick to watch her over an elf or fae that fart magic. She probably doesn't have a high view count or following.
Ash shrugged. I tried some of the ones with a ton of followers, but all their vids start with them listing off credentials or their family tree and how that makes them so much better than everyone else. Ash pointed at the wolfkin on the screen. She had long red hair, topped with black wolf ears and dark green eyes, and she had a bright smile that was highlighted by her makeup style. Ember explains shit in a way that I understand. I've been binge-watching her content all night, and already have a few ideas for some potential spells and exercises for my magic. Ash brought up Ember's information page on the laptop. The wolfkin was smiling as she held a fireball in her hand. She even has contact information and encourages people to reach out to her for advice or help. I plan to join the messenger app she uses. Just need a username. Beau thought for a moment and scratched his chin.
Smoke,
he finally said. Seriously? Ash said with a raised eyebrow.
Hey, you're signing up to talk to a streamer named Ember. Where there's smoke, there's embers, or something like that. Besides, you have any better ideas?
Beau had him there. All right, I'll use smoke, but if she ends up thinking I'm an edgelord or something, I'm blaming you. Also, any ideas on where I can safely practice magic?
The east side of town, not far from the piers, is where the locals practice spell work. Open beach with a rusted cargo ship that they use to set targets up.
Beau finished his coffee with a bitter look on his face that was not from the drink.
You will run into Phelan if you start going there.
We live in the same town. We will run into each other. Ash grumbled. The next day, Ash left at dawn and headed for the beach Beau had told him about. He spent a decent part of yesterday catching up on sleep and going over a few more of Ember's videos. He did try some other streamers, but he had trouble following them. Perhaps it was because Ember was self-taught, and that resonated with him. The area was a large beach with an old cargo ship rusting away on the sand from where some storm had marooned it years ago. Other than the ship and some large rocks, there was nothing else around making it a good place to work spells. Beau was also right about him running into Phelan, though he had hoped it wouldn't be so soon. The Beastkin gang leader was hurling her earth magic at a piece of the ship, making it sound like a gong with each strike.
Oh, shit,
Ash cursed to himself. Phelan's sapphire eyes turned and locked on him as he walked past her to the other end of the ship. He ignored her stare as he opened his backpack and pulled out the notes he had taken, sitting in the sand to go over them. A minute later, the sound of a gong announced she had finally lost interest in him, but Ash didn't care about Phelan. His mind was wrapped in the new spell theory he had created from watching Ember. The spell theory was basic in concept, and Ember had described it as for beginners, but it would give Ash a range attack. Currently, the only spell he had in his repertoire was his Lightning Claw, which after last night's binge-watching he understood was inadequate and could be greatly improved. Nothing in the world existed as he drew his magic into his index and middle finger, doing his best to keep the flow constant. It felt like trying to balance a pen on his finger, but was something Ember had stressed was essential to the spell's quality. Speed came with practice and the building of muscle and magic memory. While Lightning Claw continuously ran the lightning between his fingertips, this spell would push the lightning through his index and middle fingers forward. When it made contact with its target, or the magic thinned enough, it would end the spell. A streak of lightning left the two fingers and silently struck the side of the ship, leaving a scorch mark. Ash smiled at the success of the new spell. Bolt, he decided to call it, as he drew magic and cast it again and again. Each cast an attempt to work out the inefficiencies and improve the form. The silence of the surroundings caught his attention after a while, and he turned to see Phelan had stopped her spell work and was watching him. Ash ignored her and went back to practicing. He started at Lily's tomorrow, and was set to get as much practice in today before he started making deliveries, just in case someone tried to jump him again. She tries to attack me, and she'll get a bolt to the face, he thought. Phelan didn't attack him, though. Instead, she left and came back a few hours later, resuming her spell work. Ash had spent the time she was gone practicing Bolt and Lightning Claw until his magic levels were depleted, only to rest and repeat the process once it had built back up. Ember had recommended this as a good way to improve both efficiency with spells and to grow the amount of magic his body could produce. He finally called it quits at sunset. Phelan had left an hour before, and Ash made sure to keep an eye out for her, or any of her gang, on his way back to the apartment. Life fell into a rhythm over the next 2 weeks as Ash settled into life on Davos. His days were normally split between working at Lily's, practicing spell work before and after, and hanging with Beau during the weekends. Though, at times, the job at Lily's was a lot more than what he signed up for.
Lily, where did you say you put those orders? Ugh, come here.
Ash sighed after he caught a glimpse of her. He grabbed a paper towel and wet it from the tap.
Huh?
Lily asked, as she held a slice of chocolate cake in her hand. Her face was spattered with frosting. Ash was wiping the dryad's face off with the wet paper towel before she knew what was happening. She grumbled protests, but didn't resist his attempts to clean her up.
You know, dryads have killed people for lesser things,
Lily threatened with a glare. Vines started to surround Ash, which made him roll his eyes at the dryad before lifting her chin to get a spot of frosting he had missed. Lily pouted at him.
It's no fun if you're not afraid.
Uh-huh. After 2 weeks of picking up after you, I welcome death,
Ash joked. Now, I'm going to get you a plate and a fork before we get a ton of complaints that your next batch of potions tastes like frosting. Lily just stuck her tongue out at him.
Now, about those orders?
Ash asked again once he got Lily set up. Lily waved the fork at him after taking a bite.
I'll get them to you once I'm done with my cake and you can go deliver them.
Ash's phone chimed. He pulled it out, chuckling at the message, and typed out a reply before turning back to Lily.
When you're finished with what's on your plate or the whole cake?
Ash asked, returning to their conversation. Lily rested her chin on her hand and smirked at him.
Message from your online girlfriend.
Ash sighed and repeated the line he had already said a few times.
Not my girlfriend. Ember is a streamer knowledgeable in magic that is helping me learn magic theory and application. This is a professional relationship.
Her smirk shifted into a full grin.
Professional relationship? Right. So, what magic theory or application did she just send you to make you laugh? Or how about any of the other dozens of messages you two have been sending to each other all day?
Ash slipped his phone into his pocket and scratched his chin.
All right, it was a meme, and we do talk about other stuff than just magic, but we are just friends. She doesn't even know what I look like. Also, you're trying to distract me from my question.
Cake,
Lily said after she took another bite. She pointed the fork back at Ash.
Good. Keep things as friends, at least for a few more weeks. I have a bet with Beau that you two will make it a month before you start sexting each other.
Ugh, of course you and Beau would do something like that,
Ash groaned. Lily finally got around to giving him the delivery orders 2 hours later. She had made herself sick by trying to actually eat a whole cake and refused to do anything until the potion she took stopped the nausea. Unfortunately for Ash, that meant today was going to be a longer workday than normal.
I had given up hope of getting these today,
the old orc said as he took the package. This was the last delivery. Ash had busted his ass to get them all out by sunset. He was ready to head home and crash on his bed. Tomorrow, he told himself, he would make Lily a cake with toothpaste. Maybe that would ruin the dryad's sweet tooth. Sorry, we had some issues organizing the orders that, unfortunately, took some time, Ash said with a fake smile on his face. The fake smile turned to panic at the sound of a motor revving behind him. Turning, he saw Lily's bike throttling at full speed down the street. The rider's screams of excitement quickly turned to terror as the beastkin figured out they didn't know how to drive a motorcycle. Ray stood across the street with a few of her gang, laughing hysterically. Ash sneered at her before charging in the direction of the bike. The rider was putting all of their efforts into keeping the bike balanced as it barreled straight towards the pier. Ash cursed as the bike and rider shot off the end of the pier into the sea. Worse yet, they had not surfaced by the time he made it there. Ash dove off the pier, his eyes burned from the salt water as he scanned the bottom of the seafloor. The motor thief was flailing around desperately, trying to swim back to the surface. The beastkin was in a state of panic and had not realized their jacket was snagged on the handle of the sports bike. Ash swam down and freed the jacket before guiding them back to the surface. The beastkin, who he now saw was a woman, reached for the pier and cast Ash a fearful glance before darting off. Ash paid her little mind. He was instead focused on the dock winch at the end of the pier. At least he had a way to try and get the bike out. He was off the mark a little when he dove down with the slip hook from the winch. Instead of the bike, he found a large iron safe bound in chains. His mind reeled with all the horrible reasons someone would bind a safe and throw it into the sea, but his curiosity overrode his better judgment. He would need a lot of strength to use the manual winch to haul the bike, let alone the safe, out of the water. Fortunately, Ember had shared a technique she had created that would help with the task. None of her videos mentioned the technique. It was something she shared with him during one of their many conversations. Pushing magic into his muscles, Ash increased his strength and started cranking the winch. He doubted he would have been strong enough without Ember's body enhancement technique to even turn it once. When the safe was on the pier, he dove back in and started the process over for the sports bike. Night had set by the time he had both of them on the pier. No one disturbed him as he attacked the rusted iron chains on the safe with a hammer. It only took a few swings for them to snap off.
Well, the easy part is done. Now how am I going to get the door off?
The safe handle turned as he tried it. His heart raced as he opened the door, dreading what might be inside. Everything told him this was probably a very bad idea. A fog poured out from the safe, rushing towards Ash. His lungs burned as they filled with fog, making him cough and gasp for air. Then it was gone, not a wisp to be seen as he breathed heavily, eyes watering from the lack of oxygen as he took his first breath of clear air. The inside of the safe was visible from the pier lights. It was empty, apart from deep scratch marks that filled its interior.
"Push it back into the sea. Do it. Do it,"
a feminine voice whispered in his ear. Ash stood up, looking around, his eyes scanning the empty pier for who the voice belonged to.
"Who's there?"
"Do it. Back into the sea. Do it," the voice whispered again in his ear.
Electricity danced in his hand from Lightning Claw as he turned around looking for the voice.
"Do it!"
the voice demanded, this time with a yell. Excruciating pain shot through his arm, cutting off the magic of his Lightning Claw. Instead, a thin black wisp danced on his arm, followed by searing pain. Cradling the arm, Ash kicked the safe off the pier and back into the sea. The pain cut off once the safe had gone under the waves.
"Tell no one about the safe, about me, or else."
Pain flared across his whole body, only lasting a second, but the message was clear. Ash stood on the pier for another hour, waiting for the voice to say something else or to respond to the questions he asked it. All he got was silence. Eventually and wearily, he started pushing the sports bike home, hoping this was all just a nightmare. Chapter 4. Ash rolled out of bed feeling drained, as if he had been pushing his magic dry. His body ached, and he felt lightheaded as he stood up. He stood for a moment, trying to recall if he and Beau had gone to the twins yesterday and had one too many. His dreams last night were certainly messed up. He got dressed and staggered out into the kitchen. Beau cast him a worried glance as he passed the living room.
You look like shit. What time did you come home last night?
Ash went straight for the coffee pot and poured himself a cup. He took a few sips of the black, warm liquid before he answered.
Not sure. Had a weird dream last night.
The quick flare of pain that spread across his shoulder woke him up faster than the coffee. A soft voice whispered into his ear.
Remember, don't tell, or else.
A chill ran down his spine, and he moved to sip his coffee to mask his shudder.
Just a rough night. One of Ray's minions hijacked Lily's bike and drove it off the pier.
Beau shook his head.
Lily'll be pissed, though not much she can do about it. You would have more luck draining the ocean than getting failing a Ray to pay to replace it.
I was able to get the bike out, though I'm not sure if I'll be able to get it running again,
Ash said, trying to hide his nerves being on edge.
Good thing it's the start of the weekend, then. Maybe if we put our heads together, we can get it running before you go back to Lily's Monday.
Ash forced a smile.
I appreciate it, Beau. Maybe we can try tackling it once I get back from the beach. Need to work out some frustration. Maybe I'll draw Ray's face on the side of the old ship for a target.
Ash opened the small bag of rice sitting at the end of the counter and pulled his phone out of it. At least he had enough sense when he got home last night to try this. Holding down the power button, the screen eventually lit up, and Ash scrolled through his messages, most of which were from Ember, and a few from Lily. He wondered if the voice could see what he typed on his phone. Lily and Ember were the only people he knew who might know what the voice was, or even how to get rid of it. The thought of the searing pain all over his body stopped him from testing this, though, and instead he sent both texts apologizing for not responding and that he had issues with his phone last night. The rusted cargo ship was the only occupant on the beach when Ash arrived. The district had less than a dozen people who came here to practice spells. Most were orcs or other races. Phelan was the only beastkin he had seen here. None of the others came as often as Phelan and him, though. He was glad it was empty today. At least he wouldn't look like a madman.
Still going to ignore me?
He asked the voice. Silence was the response as he took his usual spot to practice his spells. He readied himself to run through casting Bolt as a warm-up for the day, but when he started pulling his magic, it came slowly in a small trickle. He pulled harder, straining to command the magic to flow more to fuel the spell. The bolt he cast was pathetic and barely went a yard before dispersing. The voice laughed at him.
You're stealing my magic, aren't you?
He knew the answer. Even at his most drained, he would replenish in an hour or two. Instead, he had felt drained all morning, and the poor rate of his magic returning to him would take all day to replenish. The response of the voice to his question was again silence.
I'll take that as a yes, parasite.
She did not like being called that, and pain hammered him until he was on his knees. Despite that, he smiled through the pain. A manic smile, though. The past few weeks had been a continuous stream of bullshit being piled upon him, trying to drown him in excrement. Exiled from his homeland, beaten and robbed, and now his magic was being stolen from him. Ash laughed as the thought formed in his mind. A thought born of pure spite, and a realization that the voice had to use magic to hurt him and would not kill him because it needed his magic. He started pulling at his magic. Little sparks of lightning danced from his fingers as he did. He steeled his nerves for the pain that was about to come. This was a stupid idea.